Welcome to Daily Wisdom, Walking the Path with the Buddha, a podcast shared by David Roylance. This podcast is dedicated to guiding you to completely eliminate the discontent mind and the suffering it causes by attaining enlightenment. Learn and practice the teachings of Gautama Buddha that will guide you to fully attain a peaceful, calm, serene, and content mind with joy. To support this podcast, visit patreon.com/supportbuddha or visit buddhadailywisdom.com, where you will discover a full range of courses, retreats, and online learning resources to assist you on the path to enlightenment. Now, here's our teacher to share more.
Okay, I'm going to go ahead and get started with dependent origination, and I'm sure other people will come in as we get going. So with dependent origination, there's a bunch of things that I have here to kind of help you get started with it, but I've already talked about a good number of these. We've already talked about how dependent origination is the highest law of nature. It helps you to understand discontentedness and rebirth. It's these 12 interlinking steps to help you understand how a being comes into existence and experiences discontentedness. It helps you to understand the problem and the solution of eliminating discontentedness and rebirth. It's kind of like a two-for-one special. If you're eliminating discontentedness, you're eliminating rebirth as well. It's the same cause and underlying feature that's causing discontentedness. It's the same thing that's causing continuous rebirth. So by you focusing on eliminating craving, desire, attachment to eliminate discontentedness, you're also eliminating rebirth as well. But the Buddha is going to show you in dependent origination how a being comes into existence and how they're experiencing discontentedness. So far, what you already understand is that the problem is craving, anger, and ignorance. We describe that as part of the three poisons. But if you remember when I talked about the three poisons or the three unwholesome roots or the three fires, I introduced it as craving, anger, and ignorance. But I shared that because of ignorance, craving and anger continues to exist. And then the solutions that you learn is cultivating wisdom, eliminating craving or clinging, which helps you to eliminate the anger. So this is kind of just like a little bit of a summary of the three poisons in case you guys have any questions on that. So some of you guys weren't here for that. So I'll just share that craving, desire, attachment is like the selfish desires, the longing, the yearning, the chasing after the objects of your affection. Then if you get what you want, you get pleasant feelings. If you don't get what you want, you get painful feelings. Then the anger is going to arise, the bitterness, the hostility, the animosity. And this is where the mind oftentimes falsely believes that those painful feelings are happening because of something external. And then you'll either push this person away or you'll push the situation away. That's the first thing that the mind will do. This is called aversion. And it doesn't actually solve the problem because the real problem is inside the mind. But the unenlightened mind doesn't understand that because of its lack of wisdom. Then the second thing that it'll do is it might be unskillful in its intentions, speech, and actions. It'll be bitter and harsh and hostile. And then someone might choose to leave out of your life because you were bitter, harsh, and hostile. Or the third thing that the mind will do when it misunderstands what the problem is it'll put your expectations on somebody, trying to control them and get them to do things your way. Because the mind thinks if I could just get these cravings fulfilled, everything will be perfect. If everybody just does things my way, everything will be perfect in the world. But that's not the world you live in. The world's not going to function according to you and according to what's in your mind. It's functioning according to these natural laws of existence. But the unenlightened mind wants the world to function according to your mind and the way that things go on in your mind. So when things aren't happening in the world the way you want, this is why you'll push people away, you'll be bitter and harsh and hostile, or you'll put your expectations on people trying to get people to do things your way. And this craving is motivating the anger. When the anger is arising, then this is what it experiences, the pushing away, the bitter, the harshness, the hostility, or the expectations. And where this is all coming from is this ignorance or unknowing of true reality. The confusion, the misunderstanding, the lack of wisdom that's in the unenlightened mind. These are referred to as the three unwholesome roots or the three poisons or the three fires. And this is how we talk about it from a high level. The Buddha's teachings are like a layered effect. There's the Four Noble Truths, which is kind of giving you a window into the unenlightened mind, helping you understand craving, desire, attachment. Then there's the three poisons, three unwholesome roots, or three fires, which is like another level of detail. Now you're about to start studying dependent origination, which shows you the whole kit and caboodle, so to speak, the whole thing. He's showing you these 12 interlinking steps of what's exactly causing discontentedness and why you keep experiencing rebirth over and over and over again. Before we study the detailed dependent origination, there's this simplified version of dependent origination that you need to first understand in order to understand dependent origination. Because in order to understand dependent origination, you need to see these connecting teachings. You need to be able to see when this exists, that comes to be. With the arising of this, that arises. Or when this does not exist, that does not come to be. With the elimination of this, that ceases. So let me give you some examples and help you understand this. This first one where it's when this exists, that comes to be. When you choose to go to school, you learn English. When you learn English, you can apply for a job. When you apply for a job, you get the job. When you get the job, you have an income. When you have an income, you can buy clothes. When you buy clothes, you can go outside and meet people. When you go outside and meet people, you have friends. When you have a problem, then you have friends that you can talk to and you can get help with your problem. This is the cause and effect, the cause and effect, the cause and effect. When this condition exists, this condition comes to be. When you learn English, you're able to get a job. When you get a job, you're able to have an income. When you have an income, you're able to go outside and see other people, right? So this is when this exists, this comes to be. There's this connectingness, this conditionality, or this causation that is occurring. And then likewise, when this does not exist, this does not come to be. So when you do not go to school and you do not learn English, then you cannot apply for a job. When you don't apply for a job, you're not going to have an income. And when you don't have an income, you can't purchase clothes. And when you can't purchase clothes, you can't go outside and meet other people and make friends. So then when you have a problem, you don't have people that you can talk to and get help, right? So that's what the second one is. When this does not exist, that does not come to be. So this is causality. When one thing is true, it leads to this other thing. And when this thing is true, it leads to this other thing. And when this thing is true, it leads to this other thing. Do you guys understand this? This is pretty straightforward, right? Okay. So this is like a simplified version of dependent origination, that because of this, this comes to be. It's showing this cause and effect, or action and result, the results of your decisions. This is how the natural law of Gamma is all based on, is that when you make wise decisions, it produces wholesome results. When you make unwise decisions, it produces unwholesome results. The natural law of Gamma, it's not mystical or magical. It's not any being controlling anything. It's not punishments and rewards. It's this dependent origination. It's this cause and effect, or action and result. When this comes to be, then that exists, right? And when this is eliminated, that also doesn't come to be, right? So this is a simplified version. Now we're going to study it in detail. I'm going to read it to you, and then I'm going to walk you through it so you can understand it, okay? So here the Buddha says, monks, with ignorance, annoying as true reality, as condition, volitional formations, choices or decisions come to be. With volitional formations as condition, consciousness. With consciousness as condition, name and form. With name and form as condition, the six sense bases. With the six sense bases as condition, contact. With contact as condition, feeling. With feeling as condition, craving. With craving as condition, clinging. With clinging as condition, existence. With existence as condition, birth. With birth as condition, aging and death, sorrow, grief, pain, displeasure, and despair come to be. Such is the cause of this whole mass of discontentedness. Okay, so this is dependent origination, the first part of it in detail. The other part of this, he's explaining what each individual thing is. He explains what ignorance is, what volitional formations are, what consciousness is. And you can see it in the book series that I share. I share the entire dependent origination. It's using that reference. You can find it in volume 5, chapter 14. You'll find the full entire dependent origination. But here, this is the crux of it that I can now explain to you. So let me just explain to you what each one of these things are, and then I'll walk you through it to understand it. So ignorance is that unknowing of true reality, the lack of wisdom, right? The mind just doesn't understand what it doesn't understand in the unenlightened state. What volitional formations are, you learned about those just a bit ago. Those are the choices and decisions that one makes. What consciousness is this is the mind itself. What name and form is what name is this is essentially, here I'll show you on the next page actually. What name is feelings, perception, volitional formations, contact, and consciousness. This is essentially four of the five aggregates, with contact there as well. You're going to learn what contact is in a moment. Then what form is, the Buddha refers to it as the four great elements. This is the way that he referred to the physical body. He would talk about it as the earth element, the wind element, the fire element, and the water element. This is how they describe the body. And if you look at traditional medicine in various countries, they will diagnose and treat the body through these four elements. Nowadays, we talk about cells, molecules, atoms, bone structures. We talk about much different level because we've investigated over 2,500 years. We've learned more about the body than they understood 2,500 years ago. So essentially what the Buddha is describing here is name and form is he's describing the physical body. So that's the way you might decide to think about this. Even though he's describing it here through the four great elements, what the earth element is it's the physical structures of the body, the solids. So your teeth are the earth element. Your hair is the earth element. The bones are the earth element. The water element are the fluids of the body, like the tears, the saliva, the urine, the blood, the pus. This is all the water element. The fire element is like the heat in the body, the temperature. And then the wind element is the movement, like the movement of food through the intestines or the movement of the blood in the vein. That's the wind element. So in traditional medicine, they will diagnose problems based on a depleted earth element or an inflated wind element. This is how they diagnose and treat the body through the traditional element system. So that's what they described back then. But the way that I would encourage you to think about this name and form is as the physical body. And you'll see how that makes more sense when I walk you through this. What the six sense bases are, what you just learned, the eyes, ears, nose, tongue, the body, and the mind itself. Then there's contact. Contact is some experience that you're having through the six sense bases. You're coming in contact with a form that you see. You're coming in contact with a sound, with an odor, with a flavor, with a physical object, or with a mental object. That's what contact is. Then there's feeling. Feeling are pleasant feelings, painful feelings, neither painful nor pleasant. Then there's craving, which is longing and yearning. When I talk about craving in all the foundational classes, I talk about craving, desire, attachment, wants, expectations, longing, yearning, grasping, holding, clinging. I just talk about it as all one thing. But in reality, the mind is doing two different things. It's craving, which is the longing and yearning, the chasing after something. Then there's the clinging, which is holding on to a particular thing. So here you can see the two different things, that there's craving where the mind's longing and yearning for something, but then there's clinging, holding on. That's the two different things. Then there's existence. Existence is like coming into existence. A being is now formed. A being is now formed. There's now an existence. Then there's birth, which means that being, in our case, human beings, we're being born into the world through the womb of a woman. Then once there's birth, there's aging and death. I think you guys understand that one pretty well, what aging and death is. And then when there's aging and death, there's also going to be sorrow, grief, pain, displeasure, and despair. That's discontentedness, the sorrow, grief, pain, displeasure, and despair. Okay. Any questions on any of these individual things before I describe and walk you through what's happening here and what he's really teaching? Okay, no questions. Okay, so what he's teaching you here is that because of ignorance in the mind, because of your unknowing of true reality, because of your lack of wisdom, you're making decisions, choices and decisions that lead to unwholesome results in your life. And one of those unwholesome things is that it forms a new consciousness. that there's a consciousness that comes to be because of these unwise decisions that the mind has maintained this lack of wisdom. It now forms this consciousness. Once there's a consciousness that comes into existence, then it's going to need to find a physical body, which is the name and form. That consciousness is going to find a physical body, which is in the womb of a woman, in our case of a human being. Then once that consciousness and that physical body have come together, then the six sense bases are going to be formed. Now there's going to be the eyes, ears, nose, tongue, the body, and the mind itself. This is now going to form within the womb, and that's going to continue to mature. And now you're going to experience contact through those six sense bases. And based on experiencing contact, now there's going to be certain feelings that arise, either pleasant, painful, neither painful nor pleasant. And when you experience those pleasant feelings, then the mind is going to crave for those pleasant feelings to be permanent. And now the mind craves and craves and craves, longs and yearns, wants those pleasant feelings to be permanent. Then you're going to cling to the objects that are bringing you those pleasant feelings. You're going to cling and hold on to them. Then there's going to be an existence. A being is going to come into existence. It's going to be born. And then once a being is born, it's going to experience aging, where it gets older, and it's going to ultimately experience death. It's going to arise, change, and fade away. Then during that lifespan, you're going to experience sorrow, grief, pain, displeasure, and despair. This is the discontentedness that one is experiencing. So here, what you can learn is that because of ignorance, the mind craves. And when it's craving, it's then going to experience discontentedness. Because of ignorance, the mind craves. Because of craving, it's going to experience anger. Right? So this is the three unwholesome roots, or the three fires, in detail form. Right? He's showing you the interlinking steps of what one thing leads to the next, that leads to the next. That because in your past life, you had this ignorance and your unknowing of true reality, you didn't understand what you didn't understand, you made certain decisions that were unwise. And one of the unwise decisions that we made is that we didn't eliminate our cravings, desires, attachments. So now it produced a consciousness. Once that consciousness was in existence, now it's going to find a body. Once it found a body, there's these six sense bases that were formed. Once we experienced the forming of those six sense bases, we started getting contact through these six sense bases. Then we started experiencing pleasant feelings. And then we started craving, longing, yearning. Then we started clinging and holding on. Then we had an existence where we were then born, and now we're experiencing aging and death. And if your mind is unenlightened, you're experiencing sorrow, grief, pain, displeasure, and despair, all because of this ignorance. So this is why when you first learn with me, I teach you not to believe anything. Because the way to dismantle dependent origination and get to enlightenment is you've got to eliminate this first cause and condition that's allowing this chain of events to occur. These are essentially like dominoes, that one domino leads to the next, leads to the next, leads to the next, leads to the next. They keep falling down. So if you can eliminate this first domino, if you can eliminate your ignorance, then you won't experience discontentedness and you won't continue to experience rebirth over and over. So by cultivating wisdom to train the mind where you don't believe any of the teachings of the Buddha, you learn them, reflect on them to independently verify them and practice them, then you can get to wisdom. And now when you make volitional formations, when you have choices and decisions, they're based in wisdom. And now you can dismantle this whole interlinking thing that is being shown here. Any questions on this? Yes.
I'm just curious about why is existence and birth no immediately after name and form? It's like there's a whole bunch of other things that apparently we experience before actually coming into existence. Can you please explain that?
Yeah, this is all happening inside the womb, because when you're inside the womb, you're feeling great, right? Like mom's got her umbilical cord hooked up to you. You're just hanging out and all this amniotic fluid. You're getting all the food and nutrients and all these different things. You've come into existence, but you haven't been born yet. You've come into existence and now you're just hanging out and your sixth sense bases are there. You're craving and you're clinging. And now when labor comes along and you get pushed out into the world or you have surgery and you come into the world, you're discontent right away, right? Right away, we're discontent when we're born right away because we're craving to be in mom's stomach. We experience this impermanence. We got the first big impermanence of our life, being born into the world. And that's where the sorrow, grief, pain, displeasure, and despair come to be because the mind's craving. So all of this is happening inside the womb. You're in existence, but you haven't been born yet. Mm-hmm. Do you see it? Oftentimes, students need to sit with this many times to learn it and understand it. If you have questions, you want to ask questions, right? If there's ego in there, maybe you don't want to ask questions. But if you set aside the ego, if you don't understand something, just say, hey, I don't understand. Can you help me? You'll need to investigate this and be able to see very clearly how all of these things are interlinking. And the reason why this is helpful for you is because it helps you to focus on what is it that you're really trying to do in this life. What you're really trying to do is get rid of this ignorance. You're trying to get to wisdom. Every single thing you do in life, you're trying to get to wisdom. So if at any point you're ever struggling in life and you're having difficulties, it's just because your mind lacks certain wisdom. There's certain wisdom that you need that you don't have. So you're struggling in this world. That struggle is an indication to you that you don't yet have the wisdom that you need to make volitional formations and choices and decisions. So now what the unenlightened mind will tend to do is it will tend to walk away or run away from any struggles or difficulties that we're experiencing. But if you understand your goal is to cultivate wisdom, what you do instead is you turn around and you walk towards the struggle. You walk towards the difficulty and you cultivate the wisdom. Because if you don't cultivate the wisdom, that thing is going to just repeat over and over and over and over again. Wherever you're having challenges and difficulties, if you need to reach out to me, I'm here to help you. If you have friends or family that you need help from, ask people questions and get the wisdom that you need so that then your volitional formations can be based in wisdom. When you're struggling, that's the indication to you that there's certain wisdom that you haven't cultivated. So your whole goal in this life is to cultivate wisdom about this world around you so that now you can make wise decisions that produce wholesome results so that you can get to this peacefulness, this calmness, this serenity, the contentedness with joy. And having done so, then you won't experience continuous discontentedness and you won't experience continuous rebirth either. One of the ways that you can look at this, because there's a lot of detail here, when you're first getting started, you can look at this almost like an equation, that ignorance plus craving equals anger or discontentedness, right? The Buddha is showing you all the interlinking steps that lead from one to the next, but you can also look at it in summary form of, because of ignorance, your mind continues to crave, and because of craving, then you continue to experience discontentedness. But he's showing you all the interlinking steps that's leading to this with the creation of the sixth sense bases and all these other things that he's describing. Yes.
So a wise thing maybe to cessate this.
I can't hear you. I'm sorry.
Sorry. So maybe a wise decision to avoid all this cycle of pain and dukkha. Would maybe just avoid the birth. So maybe the wise thing would be for stop having babies. These would help to avoid the cycle of samsara and other, you know, to keep this samsaric experience, maybe.
Right. That's what the Buddha is explaining to you, how to get outside of the cycle of rebirth. So by the time you get to enlightenment, you've dismantled dependent origination. You're no longer in the cycle of rebirth. You've escaped the cycle of rebirth. So you can be in existence with an enlightened mind, but be outside of the cycle of rebirth. As long as you have these 12 interlinking steps in the mind, you're still stuck in the cycle of rebirth, and you're going to continue to be reborn over and over and over again. But by eliminating ignorance, you eliminate birth. If you're no longer born, then you won't experience sickness, aging, and death, grief, sorrow, pain, displeasure, and despair. So that's why this is so important to understand, so that you can see the 12 interlinking steps so that you can dismantle it. And now by eliminating craving, desire, attachment, you eliminate your discontentedness and you eliminate rebirth so that you're not continually coming back into the world and experiencing this whole cycle over and over and over and over again.
Okay. In another words, maybe for people, normal people that are not monks, still would be good not to have kids. Like, this is my question. This would be a wise decision.
Each individual is going to be different because a craving, desire, attachment is going to be eliminated either through you cutting it off and eliminating it from the mind, or in some cases, you need to fulfill a certain craving, desire, attachment. So for example, if I'm wanting to go to the Philippines and I have a craving, desire, attachment to go to the Philippines and I've never been, I can cut that off and eliminate it out of the mind and work to train my mind and restrain the mind that, hey, I don't have enough money, I can't go to the Philippines. Or I could just go to the Philippines, check it out, tour around a little bit, and then you eliminate your craving. It's like, all right, been there, done that. I don't need to go to the Philippines anymore. So the same thing is true about children. You could choose to not have a child if that's what you would like to do, and you could cut that off and let it go and choose not to have a child. Or if you just have a craving to have a child, sometimes the best way to extinguish it is to have a child. And now you have that child and you've eliminated that craving. If you get to the end of your life and you haven't had a child and you've always been wanting a child and you're longing and yearning for a child, you're going to be reborn because you have a craving, desire, attachment in the mind. So you can't say that having a child is unwise or it's wise. It's about what you need to do in order to extinguish your cravings, desires, attachments. And sometimes you need to fulfill the craving in order to actually extinguish it. Any other questions on this? Okay, so now I'm going to show it to you in a slightly different way. So here, there are certain past causes, certain ignorance and volitional formations that you've made in the past. And now you're having these present effects where there's a consciousness, there's a physical body, there's these six sense bases, you're experiencing contact, and you're experiencing certain feelings. Then there's certain present causes. Because of your craving, clinging, and existence in this life, it's now going to lead to a future effect of birth, aging, and death. This make sense to you? It's okay if it doesn't. I understand. You usually have to revisit this multiple times. So let me share that again. So there's certain past causes in your previous life where you've had ignorance that have led to volitional formation, certain choices and decisions that you made. Then currently the present effects is that you have a consciousness, you have a physical body, you have these six sense bases, you're experiencing contact through those six sense bases, and then there's certain feelings that you're experiencing, either pleasure, pain, or neither painful nor pleasant. Now in the present moment, you're having craving, clinging, and there's this existence where you're in existence. And now, if you don't extinguish those, there's going to be future effects where there's going to be birth, aging, and death. Okay, this is breaking down dependent origination in a slightly different way. But then we could also look at it in this way too, that within each life, you have all of these things going on. That in your past life, you had all 12 of these things. In your current life, you have all 12. And then if you don't extinguish your craving, desire, attachment, then in your future life, you're going to have all 12 of these as well. Okay? Any questions? I think some of you guys probably understand it. Some of you guys are probably like, not quite sure. Some of you guys might be like, yeah, not getting it. And that's okay. That's impermanence. You'll need to revisit this multiple times. What this essentially gives you in dependent origination is it keeps you focused on what the ultimate goal is ignorance, eliminating ignorance, learning, reflecting, and practicing, eliminating craving, desire, attachment, eliminating discontentedness. That's what it's focusing you on. All these interlinking steps are just showing you how a being comes into existence and helping you be able to see that very clearly. And now, if you've just started learning with me, now might not be the time that you decide to approach this and tackle this. Usually when you first get started, you're focusing on the Four Noble Truths, the Eightfold Path, meditation training, this five precepts and things like that. Right? You're really focused on that. This is something that you're starting to really pay a lot of attention to later after you get all those foundational teachings under your belt. Okay? Looks like Corey has a question.
So Just have a question. So since existence and rebirth comes towards the end of the list, what would your opinion be if a woman experienced a miscarriage?
What this is a being that's trying to come into the world, that its gamma is such that it's not ready to come into the world, right? That it's trying to be reborn. It found a certain name and form, but that name and form wasn't viable, that it wasn't able to sustain life. So now that being is going to need to be reborn again. So it didn't really truly get to rebirth. It got to potentially some amount of existence in the womb, but now that existence wasn't viable, that led all the way to birth. So now that same consciousness, it's going to dissolve. And because that consciousness had craving still, it's going to produce a new consciousness that's going to come into the world again in some other form. So this is just a being that isn't quite ready to come into existence yet.
So it wouldn't be a thing where just before they got a new existence and rebirth that they actually got to enlightenment before it happened?
No. I mean, you can get to enlightenment at death, but because there hasn't been birth, there isn't a death, so to speak, that there hasn't even been birth yet. It hasn't gone all the way through into birth yet.
Thank you.
Yeah, you can get to enlightenment either during life or at death. And we would maybe consider that that being has died, but it hasn't really been born yet to be able to experience enlightenment at that point.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yep. Oh, Junko. Yeah, go ahead.
So according to the explanation, so as long as we have some desire or not unsatisfaction, so maybe we reborn. Like if I were or I wish, so even those people who are fighting disease, and then so they try to fix their disease or condition, and then so maybe they might think, oh, if I have a kind of a perfect body or perfect health, so I could do something as an activity, or I could be a kind of ordinary people. So maybe a lot of people so feel like kind of I wish I could. So if I don't know, I feel like that kind of feeling. So maybe so we reborn and then rebirth. So even though those people who really have a kind of poor condition, but they kind of satisfied, and then so I did the best. So those people might have a kind of might reach enlightenment. Then they might not reborn, but sorry, say it again. Sorry. So my understanding is if I kind of have a wish, so we're going to rebirth and reborn again and again.
Yeah, if there's craving, desire, attachment in the mind, there's going to be a rebirth. If you die with craving, desire, attachment in your mind, there's going to be a rebirth. So you would like to get to a point where long before you get to death that you've extinguished all your cravings, desires, attachments. And you'll know you're doing that because your discontentedness is gradually diminishing. That's how you'll know that you're working in that direction. And ultimately, you get to a point where it's a year, 2 years, 3 years, you haven't experienced any discontentedness whatsoever. And you'll know that you've extinguished all your cravings, desires, attachments, and you'll know that you're not going to experience any rebirth any longer because you've dismantled this dependent origination.
I have a question. So those people who have a kind of really poor condition, and then obviously a really have a kind of sorry about your kind of disease, but and then so I think so those people so really naturally have a maybe I like to overcome, or yeah, I like to be more healthy. So I think it's really kind of ordinary or natural desire. But so the desire sounds like a kind of bad stuff. So even though the desire shouldn't
shouldn't be exist to enlighten, to get enlightenment.
Okay, so let's use your example of somebody who wants to be healthy, right? The longing and yearning. Remember, that's what a craving, desire, attachment is, a longing, a yearning. Maybe this person goes to the gym 6 days a week, right? And maybe they're working out 3, 4, 5, 6 hours a day. Maybe they're obsessing about their food and every last little calorie, right? This is a craving, desire, attachment for health. But then on the other side, if you could care less about your health and you just eat anything and everything and you're not doing any exercise or any physical activity, that's unwise too. This desires that we're talking about, it's not a wise decision. We're talking about wise decisions. That's what you need to get to, is where maybe you work out 3 times a week. Maybe you do pay attention to your food, but you're not obsessing about it. You're not craving and longing and yearning. Mm-hmm. So it's not just about having an interest to be healthy, because that's wise to have a goal, an objective, or interest to be healthy. That's the middle way. Where if you're indifferent and you could care less about your health and you just walked across the street without looking on both sides and you weren't paying attention to your physical activity and your food intake and things like that, that's unwise. But over here, if you are obsessing about it, that's unwise too. It's going to lead to discontentedness. You can't be peaceful on either side of that. Where your peace and your joy comes in is when you can gradually work towards something. So while we're used to, in the unenlightened state, thinking that desire and wanting things and expecting things is wise, it's important that you understand what a craving, desire, attachment, a want and expectation is, which is this longing, yearning, chasing after something. The mind can almost be obsessive about it. And you can have different spectrums of cravings too. You can have obsession, but then you can also have, like, you kind of want that thing. Right? Like if you have an obsession of chocolate, for example, and you went into the store and you were obsessively buying chocolate and you were eating chocolate every day, the mind might be obsessed with it. And then if you don't have chocolate, you'll be really, 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 really angry. But you could also just kind of want that chocolate. And then when you go into the store and they don't have it, you're just kind of annoyed. You're not rage, you're not, you know, fierce anger or frustration, but you're just kind of annoyed. So there's this whole spectrum of cravings, but there's no craving, desire, attachment that is wholesome. Every single craving, desire, attachment is going to lead to discontentedness. But it's important that you see a desire as different than something that you need, right? There's wants and then there's needs. There's certain needs that you have in life. What the unenlightened mind is going to do, because of its central desire, because of this craving and clinging, it's going to have all these wants, all these longing, yearning, these desires that it's chasing after. Mm-hmm. But you would like to bring the mind into making wise decisions. Mm-hmm. So whether it's about your health, whether it's about your finances, whether it's about where you live, you know, any number of different things, you're going to need to come to the middle where you're gradually working towards something rather than chasing after it, or rather than being indifferent. You need to have wise decision-making around your needs. And you're going to need to find that. And the way that you find it is through your mindfulness. Mm-hmm. If you have awareness of mind, you can see when your mind's longing, yearning, and pulling towards something. You can almost feel it inside the mind, that the mind's pulling. That's the craving, desire, attachment. Mm-hmm. And then where you don't see the mind pulling and longing, yearning like that, that's where you use those discontent feelings as the red light on the dashboard of your car. Mm-hmm. Where you see the red light on the dashboard of your car, where you become discontent, then you walk backwards. If you know dependent origination, then you know, and you know the Four Noble Truths, and you know all these other teachings, you know that anytime you experience discontentedness, there's a craving, desire, attachment somewhere. So you can walk it backwards, starting from the discontentedness and walk backwards. And now when you eliminate those cravings, desires, attachments, because the craving is no longer there, the discontentedness will no longer exist. It's like, when we were children, we had a craving, desire, attachment for ice cream. We really wanted ice cream really badly. And if mom and dad gave us ice cream, we would get happy. And then if they didn't give us ice cream, we were sad and we were frustrated, right? That's because of our craving. Mm-hmm. But somewhere along the line, we eliminated our craving to ice cream. And now it's like, yeah, it'd be nice to have ice cream, but if we don't have it, that's fine too, right? We come to the middle with that particular thing, where we were kids, that was a really strong craving in our mind. Now we've throttled that back. We've restrained the mind. And now if we have ice cream, we're fine. If we don't have ice cream, we're fine with that too. So that's what you would like to get to, that, hey, I'm going to go work out. I'm going to go exercise. I'm going to eat some healthy food. I'm going to make wise decisions in that direction. But you realize that sometimes you're going to miss a workout. Mm-hmm. Sometimes you're going to have to eat food that is otherwise unhealthy, that it's not the food that you prefer, but you need to eat this in order to sustain your life. If you have a craving to be healthy, in that situation where you need to eat food that's not your normal food, you'll be angry, you'll be frustrated, you'll be agitated. Mm-hmm. So by coming to the middle, you understand that, okay, I'm going to 99.9% of the time work towards this health and this improvement, but I'm going to realize due to impermanence, there's going to be rare situations where I'm not going to be able to get the food that I particularly prefer, right? But if you want this food, if you want this workout, when you can't do it, you're going to be discontent. So you'd like to gradually work towards that with wise decision-making, realizing that due to impermanence, you're sometimes not going to get it. And then maintain your contentedness and your joy, even though you're not getting those things.
Thank you so much. Mm-hmm. I try to understand.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah. This word desire, you know, we use desire, we use want, we use expectations, and you need to think of it, what we're describing in Buddhism. What we're describing in the Buddhist teachings is this longing, yearning, the chasing, the wanting. I can only be happy if I get my workout in. If I don't get my workout, I'm going to be grumpy. I'm going to be irritable. Well, it's not the workout that's causing that. It's the craving, desire, attachment. Have you ever known somebody, or have you ever been that type of person that if you don't get your workout in, you're grumpy? Or if you don't get the food that you want, you're grumpy? That's the desire, the longing, yearning. But you can make wise decisions. Like, I'm interested in sharing these teachings. I would like to see more and more people in the world to get to enlightenment, but I don't have a desire for you to get to enlightenment. I don't want you to get to enlightenment. I would like to see you get to enlightenment. It would be wonderful if you did get to enlightenment, and I'm working towards that goal and objective and interest, but I don't want it. That way, if you don't get to enlightenment, I can maintain my happiness. I can maintain my joy. But if you get to enlightenment, that's fine too. You're not going to see me get all excited just because you got to enlightenment. It'll be like, all right, great. You got to enlightenment. Wonderful. Enjoy your life. Have a good time. Right? So the Buddha or someone who's teaching these teachings, we need to do it without a desire too. Like, for example, I don't know how many people we had when we first started this retreat, but we had a certain number of people here, right? And now there's been less people, and then there's been more people, and then there's less people, and then there's more people. If I had a craving for everybody who started the retreat on Sunday to be here for every single class all the way to the end, I would be discontent as people are coming and going, because I can't control impermanence. Impermanence is going to happen. All I can do is control my own mind. So even as it relates to sharing these teachings, you need to do that without a desire, without a wanting. Without a wanting things to be a certain way. But then I just gradually work towards the goal. I schedule classes, I advertise them on Facebook, I put signs out, I let people know that we're having these classes, and then I teach. And whoever's here, I teach them. And if they're not here, then I don't teach them because they're not here. So everything in your life, you'll need to do through wise decision-making without wanting it. That's what you're used to in the unenlightened state, that you only go towards things because you want to go. Or you want to do something, but you would like to do things as a wise decision, and then not cling to that decision and hold on to it, realizing that it's going to need to change. You have a question?
So this is more end of life question. Mm-hmm. And just this idea of reaching enlightenment at death. So I've done hospice work, and just observing people's last moments as they die. Conversations before that, there was a lot of focus on regret and things that hadn't happened in their life, and yet this sincere desire to do something about that in the present moment. So there was that side of it. And then also witnessing very painful deaths and very peaceful deaths. Mm-hmm. And I just recently had a friend who lost a father to cancer, and he had this excruciating passing. So I'm just kind of curious about all of that sort of,
sure.
And can somebody
who genuinely recognizes in those last, let's say, 24 hours of life that they can they really reach enlightenment in that short period of time? So anything okay. around that would be really helpful.
Sure.
And also to help my friend, because she's really suffering with having witnessed that excruciating.
Sure. So the more central desire that you have, the more painful your death's going to be, because the central desires, the mind is craving and clinging through the sense bases and holding on to this world, holding on to relationships, holding on to material objects and possessions, holding on to all these different things in the world. It's going to be very painful because your mind's having to let go, but it hasn't let go because there's still craving there. So as you're getting close to death and realizing, oh my goodness, look at all this impermanence, I'm going to die. And now I'm trying to hold on to all these things. So that's where death can be very painful for someone who has a lot of central desire. When you learn more about the fetters and you understand what each individual fetter is, you can see that natural death tends to lean towards enlightenment, but it's not possible for you to have done nothing on this path and then instantly get to enlightenment in the last 24 hours. You don't necessarily have to learn the teachings of the Buddha in order to get to enlightenment at death. My grandmother is a great example of this. Like, I'm confident that she's going to get to enlightenment at death because she's been letting go of so many things all the way. You can just see it happening. But she's read some of my books, but she doesn't understand about breathing mindfulness meditation and loving kindness meditation and things like this. But you can see, like an elderly person, when we talk about personal existence view, clinging to the self-image and the self-identity, what's one of the first things we do when we get older? We don't care about how we look, right? Like however the hair looks, however the clothes look, you just go out into the world. You don't care. You start letting go of your personal existence view as you age. Naturally, this tends to start happening. Not for everybody, but for some people, right? We start to just kind of let go. When we're younger, we're paying a lot more attention to our physical appearance. Same thing with something like a central desire. Central desire, we tend to have that really strongly when we're younger, right? Like as a kid, we crave ice cream. As we get older, not so much. When we're younger, we crave sex. We really want to have sex and intimate contact. As we get older, not so much. Central desire starts to dissipate and starts to get eliminated. So depending on where somebody is in their life, they can kind of lean towards enlightenment and kind of letting go of these fetters as they're getting close to death. And they can experience a peaceful death even without having ever studied the teachings of the Buddha. But it's very unwise to kind of bank on that, because if you can do the work now to figure all this out and then practice this, you can get to enlightenment now. And now for the next 30 years, 50 years, however many years you have left, you can be peaceful, calm, serene, and content with joy. You can enjoy the work that you've done in order to get to enlightenment. Whereas if you kind of bank on getting to enlightenment at death, you don't know that that's necessarily true. So like my grandmother is a great example of this, that she's fairly peaceful in her life, but she's still got a little bit of attachment to some of her grandkids and some other little things here and there. And she still has a little bit of worry. She doesn't understand the Four Noble Truths yet. She doesn't understand that it's her own craving, desires, attachments. But grandma's like really good at speech. Like I've never heard her say anything negative about anybody. Well, actually, when I was younger, I did hear her say a couple of negative things now that I think about it. But like her actions, I've never seen her harm anybody with her bodily actions. In her livelihood, she's always done and supported herself through wise things that's not causing harm to other people, right? So there are certain things that she's practicing. And she talks about sometimes about how hard it was to let go of her car. She was attached to her house because this house her and her husband had for like 60 years, my grandfather, and he died in 1995. And that was really hard for her when he died. But she's been gradually letting go. Now she's like 100 years old. She's living with my sister. We thought that this would never happen, that my grandmother would ever leave that house, because she's been there for like 65, 70 years living in this same exact house. Doesn't matter what happened. That house burned down halfway and she rebuilt it and moved back in, right? That's what she did. Like she's so attached to this house. We thought she would never leave this house, but now she got older and she can't take care of herself and she's living with my sister. So she's having to kind of let go of things. When I was in America a year and a half ago, she had this phone and it was a flip phone And I was suggesting to her that we buy her a smartphone because then we could video conference with her and we could do video chat. And she was like, no, I'm not letting go of this phone. No, this is my phone. Well, like 2 months later, the phone company sent her a brand new phone in the mail. And they said, we've disconnected your flip phone. It's old technology. We're no longer going to be supporting that technology. You need to use this new phone. So now she's got a new phone. So I was trying to help her let go of that phone, but I couldn't do it. So she wasn't ready to let it go. But then some impermanence happened and she had to let it go. So as you age and you go through life, you tend to start letting go of things. And grandma had to let go of these, but she was kind of irritated and frustrated. She was like, I'm going down to that phone store tomorrow and I'm going to give them a piece of my mind. Like, how dare they, you know, switch my phone like that without talking to me? And I said, grandma, going down there and being bitter and hostile with them, what's that going to do for you? How's that going to help you? She's like, yeah, you're right. Maybe I won't. Maybe I'll just try to learn this new phone, right? Because she had a lack of wisdom and she was craving her old phone and she wasn't willing to start using this new phone. But then when somebody helped her, then she was able to see, okay, let me let go of that phone. It's not going to help me to go down there and talk to the phone company. So as you age, you start letting go of things more and more. And you can have a peaceful death and you can potentially get to enlightenment. And that would be like the next second best option, because at least you're not experiencing rebirth. But the ideal thing would be to do this work now. And now you can get to enlightenment and enjoy the rest of your life. Like the Buddha got to enlightenment at the age of 35. And then he lived for the next 45 years, peaceful, calm, serene, and content with joy. When you're unenlightened, life can feel kind of miserable at times. It can feel like a real struggle. By the time you get to enlightenment, you'll be like, wow, I can do this. This is fun. Yeah, this is enjoyable. This is great. So you'll notice that about the mind, that miserable part, the part that the Buddha's talking about here, sorrow, grief, pain, displeasure, and despair, that's oftentimes the motivator that motivates us to get to enlightenment. And then that might motivate you to get to enlightenment. And then once you get to enlightenment, it's kind of like, oh yeah, this is actually quite nice living in the world this way. When you were on this old operating system of the unenlightened mind, it can feel like quite a struggle and quite difficult in a lot of situations. But when you overcome that and now you understand this world around you, it's so easy. It's so straightforward. Everything's at ease. You're so comfortable. So that's a little bit about death, that different people, depending on the amount of sensual desire they have, they'll have either a painful death or they could have a peaceful death. Getting on the path and actively pursuing it is the most wisest thing you could ever do.
Just to best help or support my friend is really then to focus on impermanence, just because she really is really struggling with the experience. Mm-hmm. Not quite sure. I'm sensing she was attached to it being a peaceful death for her, mm-hmm. for her dad. And obviously that didn't happen. It was quite the opposite. So, but she's a dear friend and I would love to be able to provide some guidance, but wise guidance, skillful mm-hmm. guidance for her.
One of the hardest things for you to potentially experience as you're making your way to enlightenment is, you know, what's causing this person's discontentedness. She's craving her dad to have a peaceful death. That didn't happen. And now it's causing her discontentedness. You probably can see this very clearly, but your friend can't. And your friend doesn't know that. And you'll see all this suffering around you, all these people being discontent. And you literally can't do anything about it. There's nothing you can do. You can suggest to them, you can provide suggestions or thoughts, or you can give them a book. You can help them perhaps look at the Four Noble Truths if that's what they're interested in. But if they're not interested, there's nothing you can do. They have to decide for themselves. They're interested in understanding their grief and their sadness and why it's occurring. And if they're not willing to do that work, then they're not going to be able to get the help. If they're willing to do that work, then that's where you might send them a video from our YouTube channel. You might send them the book and say, hey, you know, this is something you can read. You might invite them to a class or a course or a retreat or something like that. And if they're willing to look at it, oftentimes around death, when people experience death of loved ones, this is where they're suffering the most. And then they're more motivated to learn teachings like this. So if you have someone in your life that's like that, since you don't have the full capability to explain the whole path, it's usually best to give them a book, give them a link to a YouTube video, recommend a class to them, and that's the best way to help them. Mm-hmm. Okay. Any other questions? No? Okay. So the whole thing that you can come to in order to unravel the dependent origination is the cultivation of wisdom. Never believe anything. Stay dedicated to developing your practice, whether it's about the teachings of the Buddha or whether it's about how to be a great landscaper or a great cook or any other things that you're looking to do in your life. There's wisdom on the path to enlightenment to cultivate, but then there's a whole lot of wisdom in other parts of our lives too, related to our job or occupation or other things like this. If your goal is to always cultivate wisdom in life, you're always working to improve decisions that are going to produce wholesome results for yourself. So wherever you're seeing that you're struggling or having difficulties, always work towards wisdom, asking questions and getting the wisdom that you need to conduct this life. Yes, there's a ton of wisdom to understand related to the teachings of the Buddha, but there's a whole lot of other wisdom too in the world. And that's what makes the world really fun. If you're interested in learning how to fly a helicopter, go learn to fly a helicopter, right? And if your mind is concentrated and focused and calm and collected, the way that we talk about with the enlightened mind, that's going to support you to doing anything and everything that you've ever been interested in doing in your life. So if you've always had certain things in your life that you've been hesitant to do, like flying a helicopter, and you've been fearful if you'd ever really be capable of doing that, by you learning and practicing these teachings and reducing the pollution, getting to the point where the mind's more focused and concentrated, having better clarity and deeper memory, now as your mind is performing more optimally, if there's anything in life that you're interested in doing, you'll be able to go out there and do it, whether it's flying a helicopter, whether it's cooking, whether it's being a great landscaper, a gardener, or whatever it is. You can go do all those things, and you can do it without craving, desire, attachment. So what dependent origination is showing you is how the mind makes unwise decisions, and it keeps experiencing that same thing over and over and over again. If you've seen certain problems in your life repeating over and over and over and over and over again, that's because you just haven't cultivated the wisdom. So if each time you talk to your parents, you guys keep getting in arguments over and over and over and over and over and over again, it's because you haven't learned right intention, right speech yet, and you haven't cultivated the elimination of your craving, desire, attachments, and you keep experiencing this problem over and over and over and over again. So when you start gaining the wisdom of these things, you can start transforming your life and transforming your mind by making wise decisions. And that's what you're ultimately looking to get to. And that's what's going to dismantle dependent origination. You can dive into this at other times. Like I said, right now might not be the right time. For some of you, it is the right time, perhaps. For others, maybe you're still learning the foundational teachings and this is a little bit too much for you. And that's okay. This teaching is always there. I'm going to be here for a certain period of time. I'll eventually die, but you've got at least another 40 years to be able to learn before I die. And you can learn and you can grow and you can develop this teaching. But the real takeaway is to cultivate wisdom. That's what you're working towards. So any questions at all that you guys have? Let me see if we have anything online. I'm not seeing anything online either. Okay, so we've come to the point where we're going to take a break. Our van should be waiting for us outside. We're just going to go in the van and go right to Hua Tung Tao for those of you guys that would like to come. And we're going to eat over there. So we don't need to get lunch around here. So if you guys are like to come to the excursion, let's just close up shop here. And then we'll head out to Hua Tung Tao. Have a great time. Have some great food and walk around nature. Get some fresh air and see some beautiful things. Thank you guys for your questions. Look forward to hanging out with you guys. Okay. All right.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To provide support for this podcast, visit patreon.com/supportbuddha. To access more teachings, visit buddhadailywisdom.com. There, you will discover a full range of courses, retreats, and online resources to assist you on the path to enlightenment. Remember to establish a daily, consistent meditation practice, along with learning and practicing these teachings. A well-developed meditation practice is the foundation in which to train the mind to attain enlightenment.